QST from ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio. This is ARRL Audio News for August 4th, 2011. Reporting from League Headquarters in Newington, Connecticut, I'm Christine Keene, K1SFA. This all-amateur radio news report is compiled and edited from the ARRL letter. Both are available on the web, along with the latest in amateur radio news at ARRL.org. This report is also available from iTunes and our website as a podcast, or by calling 860-594-0384. Here's what we have for you this week. After a nearly four-hour delay, Arisat-1 is deployed from the International Space Station. Hams report that Arisat-1's linear transponder is working. An investigation by ARRL official observers and researchers leads to a resolution of 60-meter interference, and Angelus Antenna WP3GW is named the winner of the Silver Antenna Award. Those stories, other news, Bruce Page, KK5DO with this week's satellite update, and more, just ahead. Now, this week's report. After a delay of almost 4 hours, cosmonaut Sergei Volkov, RU-3DIS, and Alexander Samokutyayev successfully deployed amateur radio's newest satellite, Arisat-1. The deployment, originally scheduled to occur at 1457 UTC on Wednesday, August 3rd, was delayed due to antenna concerns. According to U.S. Mission Control in Houston, Arisat-1 was supposed to have two antennas, one 70-centimeter antenna and one 2-meter antenna, but Volkov and Samokutyayev expressed concern when they saw only one antenna. After discussions between the cosmonauts, the payload manager, and the ground teams in Houston and Moscow, it was decided to delay the deployment. At the time, it was uncertain if the satellite would even be deployed on this spacewalk. If Arisat-1 was not deployed during the spacewalk, the next opportunity for its deployment would have been February 2012. Instead of taking chances on the satellite not working properly once deployed, it has been decided to secure it for the time being, U.S. Mission Control reported when the decision to delay was made. After much consultation, Mission Control in Moscow told the cosmonauts that they were going to go ahead and deploy the satellite. At 1843 UTC, Volkov jettisoned Arisat-1 from its position on the pier's docking compartment on the ISS. Now, the loss of the UHF antenna means that the 435 MHz, 145 MHz linear transponder may not be operational. According to U.S. Mission Control, it can also mean that there may be a loss in data that can be downloaded from Arisat-1, as well as a loss of control capability from the ground. Even so, radio amateurs will be able to copy voice, BPSK, and SSTV images. According to Arisat-1 project manager Goldsmith, WA4SXM, Arisat-1 will be in high power mode, now that's continuous transmission, when it's in the sun. When it's in eclipse, it goes into low power or intermittent mode. For a list of Arisat-1 frequencies and modes, please see the August 4th edition of the ARRL letter. After its eventful deployment on August 3rd, Arisat-1 is definitely working. Hams from all over the world have reported hearing the voice, CW, and seeing SSTV transmissions. Now, despite concerns that the UHF antenna was either missing or damaged, the linear transponder is working and some people are already making contacts with it. The August 3rd deployment was delayed nearly 4 hours after cosmonaut Sergei Volkov, RU-3DIS, and Alexander Samokutyayev expressed concerns that only one antenna, and that would be the VHF antenna, was visible. I was able to hear myself with as little as 1 watt on the pass at 0425 UTC, said AMSAT Vice President for Operations Drew Glassbrenner, KO4MA. Antennas are an M2CP42 on RHCP up and a 10-element horizontal Yagi down. Arisat 1 sounded very good and cycled on and off with the telemetry. I also managed to grab 2 frames of telemetry right after AOS. Glassbrenner posted a video of his transponder test, and you can find a link to that video in the August 4th edition of the ARRL letter. Calling it a very good first day, Arisat 1 project manager Goldsmith, WA4SXM, said that hams are submitting SSTV images to the ARIS SSTV gallery and BPSK1000 telemetry, and experiment data is coming into the telemetry server. Arisat 1 continues to work well with good reports coming in from around the world, he said. The satellite is warmer than we expected, so we will continue to monitor this. The 435 MHz, 145 MHz linear transponder operates in mode UV. Now that's 70 centimeters up and 2 meters down. It is a 16 kHz wide inverting passband, and the convention is to transmit lower sideband on the 435 MHz uplink and receive upper sideband on the 145 MHz downlink. I'm Christine Keene, K1SFA, and this is all amateur radio news from ARRL headquarters in Newington, Connecticut, for August 4th, 2011. Now, here's AMSAT Contest and Awards Director Bruce Page, KK5DO, with this week's satellite update.
Arisat 1/Keter was deployed at 1843 UTC on August 3rd. However, the deployment was not uneventful, as the satellite was tethered outside the hatch and the cosmonauts were preparing their tethers and positions. It was noticed that the 70-centimeter antenna was missing by hams watching the live stream of the EVA. Of course, the chatter on AMSAT-BB went crazy. The deployment was delayed until the cosmonauts could determine from ground control if there was supposed to be 2 antennas and what to do about the missing antenna. We are unsure exactly what happened after that, but the satellite was deployed. Hams around the world are going to be spending a lot of time monitoring all the Arisat 1/Keter frequencies to see exactly what shape the satellite is in. The satellite will be in the high-power mode when the satellite is in sunlight and the solar panels are illuminated. When in darkness and on batteries, it will be in low power. Please send your telemetry reports to tlmreport@arisat1, that's all one word, A-R-I-S-S-A-T and the number 1, .org. This can be either voice or data telemetry. One of the first reports of telemetry came from JR8LWY. His report was at 1916 UTC, approximately 30 minutes after deployment. This is Bruce Page, KK5DO.
Thanks, Bruce. ARRL Audio News continues after this pause for stations to identify. Repeater owners, let us know if your repeater is airing ARRL Audio News with an email to k1sfa@arrl.org. Please include the day, time, location, repeater call sign and frequency, and any sponsoring club. This is ARRL Audio News, heard in Wausau, Wisconsin, via the Wisconsin Valley Radio Association's W9SM 147135 repeater during the Wednesday night swap net at 9 o'clock. Earlier this year, the Education Office at NASA's Johnson Space Center sent a message to more than 18,000 U.S. educators describing the amateur radio on the International Space Station program. This kicked off the first step in a new process used by the ARIS team in selecting U.S. schools for ARIS educational events, such as an amateur radio contact between the International Space Station and the classroom. Early last fall, staff from Johnson Space Center's Teaching from Space program approached ARIS leaders looking to revise how they work with schools in order to greatly increase the number of educators who know about ARIS. According to ARRL ARIS Program Manager Rosalie White, K1STO, the ARIS team has worked steadily for the past 6 months on an end-to-end transition for the new proposal process. The work began last October with ARRL Education Services Manager Deborah Johnson, K1DMJ, hosting a meeting at League headquarters for representatives from NASA, the League, and AMSAT. In May, White and four NASA and AMSAT team members gathered in Maryland for a two-day meeting to hammer out the final details. In its invitation, NASA gave educators 2 months, May 15th to July 15th, to submit proposals, with the best proposals earning an ARIS Educational Radio Contact. When the Teaching from Space staff tallied the numbers, the morning after the deadline day, the ARIS team was excited, White said. The TFS office received and responded to a whopping total of 113 educator inquiries asking for submittal details. They received 24 completed proposals from U.S. educators by the deadline. Additionally, Teaching from Space staff reports that since the July 15th deadline, educators have called asking to see if they could submit their proposals late. The TFS staff encouraged these educators to submit a proposal during the next window of opportunity. Each interested educator submitted a comprehensive proposal, with the ARIS contact being one of the many components related to NASA and ARRL education content, White explained. Educators had to plan creative ways to maximize student experience. A NASA ARIS team will now review the submitted proposals, and by September, they will together choose the best ones based on a set of standards. Selected schools can immediately begin implementing their educational plans, and ARIS mentors will volunteer to assist schools with the radio contact. Educators are aware that if they are selected, their ARIS ISS-to-school contacts will be scheduled between January and June 2012. According to White, the new ARIS proposal system does away with the long wait and gives educators a definite time frame for when to start their series of related lessons. For more information on this new program, please see the August 4th edition of the ARRL Letter. Angel Santana, WP3GW, has been named the winner of the 2011 Philip J. McGann Memorial Silver Antenna Award for his volunteer public relations work on behalf of amateur radio. Santana was recognized for his work and recommended for the award by the ARRL Public Relations Committee. The League's Board of Directors conveyed the award at their 2011 second meeting last month. It came as a surprise when ARRL Southeastern Division Director Greg Surratt, W4OZK, sent me the notification about winning the award, Santana said. I had about 2 hours of shock before landing again to Earth. ARRL Media and Public Relations Manager Alan Pitts, W1AGP, called Santana a spark plug for a major surge of good publicity in Puerto Rico. In recognizing my work, you have acknowledged that Puerto Rico has many equal activities, just like our colleague hams around the U.S. and in the world, Santana said. Before, you only learned of us when you saw an article on the Arecibo Observatory or in the results of contests. But in the past few years, Puerto Rican amateurs have participated in many special events. The Puerto Rico Amateur Radio Operator Day, celebrated the second Tuesday of May, has been promoted on the League's website. And now, with the ARRL Field Day rules in Spanish, it makes it easier here in Puerto Rico to develop and promote this annual event. We see at least 5 Field Day activations here on the island now, compared to only 2 10 years ago. We have realized the public relations side of Field Day is more than the competitive side. Santana said that with receiving the Silver Antenna Award, he feels the responsibility and has more of a reason to let all amateurs learn more about this island in the Caribbean. We have more than 4,000 active hams, and each month no less than 10 new ones are made. The McGann Award is named for Philip J. McGann, WA2MBQ Silent Key, a journalist who served as the first chairman of the League's Public Relations Committee. After his death, friends in the New Hampshire Amateur Radio Association joined with the League's Board of Directors to pay a lasting tribute to this important contribution that McGann made on behalf of amateur radio. The Silver Antenna Award goes to that ham who has demonstrated success in amateur radio public relations and best exemplifies the volunteer spirit of Phil McGann. Collaboration between ARRL official observers and researchers at Rutgers University has resulted in a change of operating frequency of coastal HF radars, eliminating interference to amateur stations using two frequencies in the 60-meter band. In July 2003, radio amateurs in the U.S. received secondary privileges on 60 meters. Its strict guidelines, no CW, operation just on five distinct channels using upper sideband, a maximum effective radiated power of 50 watts, and only open to general, advanced, and amateur extra class licensees have prevented it from being very popular. But over time, radio amateurs have heard various signals on the channels, and users assumed these signals were those of government users and protected as such. But recently, with more users and more people monitoring and using the band, amateurs began hearing more Coastal Ocean Dynamics Applications Radar, or CODAR, signals on the channels. CODAR is a form of HF radar used by a number of institutions to research and study ocean currents and waves. Amateurs frequently reported CODAR sounds as that repetitive loud swishing sound on the band. After comparing reception reports of these signals that we had been hearing on the East Coast and reports he had received from amateurs on the West Coast, ARRL Orange Section Official Observer Coordinator Dan Welch, W6DFW, followed up on them and began to do some research, explained ARRL Field and Regulatory Correspondent Chuck Scolott, K0BOG. We alerted official observers, especially along the coast, to monitor and forward reports. Welch enlisted the assistance of a number of these official observers and other stations to monitor the frequencies after he had received more observations. Through good cooperation with the FCC, he was able to ascertain that CODAR was being used by Rutgers University on channels 3 and 4 in the 60-meter amateur band. According to Scolott, much of the follow-up activity included good cooperation from the CODAR group at Rutgers, including Josh Coet and Ethan Handel. Rutgers is part of a regional partnership working on ocean observing. Coet told the League that information they gather is used by the Coast Guard, fisheries, offshore energy facilities, storm forecasters, and pollution studies. He explained that the transmitters are capable of 40 watts and provide information from up to 100 miles. Welch and Handel coordinated testing, and amateurs were contacted to help monitor the frequencies as Handel shut down the various transmitters in their network to determine which ones amateurs were hearing. They conducted two tests a week apart, and it was definitely determined that the pulses being heard on the two channels were being transmitted from one or more of their sites, Scolott said. It is interesting to note that the West Coast stations were able to hear the East Coast CODAR much of the time, depending on propagation. After consulting with Welch, the Rutgers team was able to move their transmitter frequencies outside of the amateur band to 4.9 millihertz to continue their valuable ocean research. Both Handel and Coet said that they are glad they were able to resolve this issue in a mutually beneficial way. Now, once again, 60 meters is quiet with regard to CODAR signals. For more information on this, and for if you have any questions about 60 meters, please see the August 4th edition of the ARRL letter. This is ARRL Audio News, heard in Michigan via the Saginaw Valley Amateur Radio Association's K8DAC 14724 repeater on Monday evenings at 8:45. Some final notes. The winner of the QST Cover Plaque Award for July is Jerry Clement, VE6AB, for his article, Gain Twist 75-Meter Mobile Monobander. Congratulations, Jerry! The QST Cover Plaque Award, given to the author or authors of the best article in each issue, is determined by a vote of League members on the QST Cover Plaque Poll webpage. Cast a ballot for your favorite article in the August issue today. And that's our report for August 4th, 2011. ARRL Audio News is a weekly service of the American Radio Relay League. ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio. News is compiled and edited from the ARRL letter. To learn more about ham radio or to get the latest in amateur radio news, visit ARRL.org. Our thanks to this week's news contributors. Reporting from League Headquarters in Newington, Connecticut, I'm Christine Keene, K1SFA, 73, and thanks for listening. Copyright 2011, ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio. All rights reserved.